Thank you for listening to Crossing Cultures. If you have been enjoying this show, please share it with a friend. Word of mouth is always great, but you can also help by sharing our podcast with someone. You can also follow us on Instagram at crossing.cultures or on Facebook. Sharing a social media post is always a great way to spread the word. And now, here's our next episode of Crossing Cultures. In our previous episodes, we shared our experience helping Ukrainian refugees cross the border from Mexico to America. We at Calvary San Diego got involved initially by shuttling them from the American front to our church. While there, they rested before we helped them move to where they needed to go next. Over time, the Mexican government got involved to help us in this process. They gave us access to a basketball gym in Mexico that we call the TJ Hub. There, the Ukrainians would safely wait their turn to cross into America. Here is Phil talking more about the government's help during this time.
I think we found a unity in a way we never expected, you know, between church and state.
Yeah.
You know, that I think like there's this always this vibe of like, oh, they're not going to be for us. And, you know, from day one at Pedestrian East, we knew we needed to get a permit to be there. In fact, they reminded us every day. You know, the police were like, where's your permit? Where's your permit? So Ben and I got on and started making phone calls. I called our mayor's office. I had just met with her about our Better Together Easter egg hunt that was coming up. So I made the call and said, hey, I need some help. You know, and it's funny because we started super timid and we ended like, where's our congressman? I need to talk to them right now. I'm not their assistant. It's funny how things change, you know. But in the beginning, it was like, you know, Madam Mayor, can you help us in any way? Well, let me see what I can do. And then we started the process of getting a permit at Pedestrian East. Yeah. Literally about 2 days before we got that permit, it all moved to Pedestrian West. And the whole thing started over again there.
Hi, my name is Phil Metzger, and in 1992, I moved to Moscow, Russia. From there, I lived in the beautiful Central European country of Hungary, where my family and I spent the next 20 years living, learning, and sharing about Jesus. Different foods, culture, and language, but underneath it all, we discovered the most amazing people. We learned that to share the gospel effectively, we had to adjust. We had to cross cultures. Now we're back in the U.S. and we're discovering that this country is a melting pot of culture. This show is committed to helping Christians connect to those who think, believe, and live differently than them. This is Crossing Cultures.
When we talk about Pedestrian West, at that point, so that we kind of timeline ourselves forward a little bit, by the time it came to Pedestrian West now, this was a border only opened for Ukrainians. Nobody else. It was not an open border. It was a closed border, only open for Ukrainians. And this, they called us the day before. Border Patrol actually called us and said, hey, don't tell the press, don't tell anybody, but we're moving the border to Pedestrian West. Can you be present? And this began a whole new season for us where now the numbers had gone from about 400 to 500 a day to a promised number of 1,200 minimum. And I knew there's no way we can continue to become a hub for that and also take care of that many people coming across. So we moved this hub to Pedestrian West. We layered it to where now everything's going to get processed. All the flights got processed there. All the Uber, you know, all of our free Uber rides, everything happened. Pedestrian West was really set up well. You know, yeah. I mean, it was a tent
so
city.
So much less chaotic.
No, it was like no chaos there compared to
Pedestrian East.
Pedestrian East. Pedestrian East is the busiest land port, I think, in North America. And so moving it over to there meant we didn't have to become, we didn't need to be a hub where we take care of flights, you know, and do all those things. We did everything from right at the border.
And also, things began to speed up more, like you said, 1,200. Sorry. So now our Ukrainian friends were already booking their flights for the same day. They knew, when I come into Tijuana Airport on a Wednesday morning, by Wednesday night, you know, I can leave out of San Diego.
Yeah, good point. It went from
need that housing.
That's right.
As much.
It went from 3 days in Tijuana to 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
they can just book their flight and leave. So we were just providing them with, you know, just some food, hang out, you know, just a place to rest for a little bit. And then they were off later that day. And so it kind of changed the fabric of our, even with our hosting.
Yeah. But I mean, what's really unique in that is like the adoption of the Tijuana system, and then the adoption at the border. Remember, because then it became the government busing them from the Tijuana airport to the hub, and then from the hub out. And then that's when our team would get them into the line, and then they'd get across the line to Ped West. But all of this, like, now that I'm stepping back from it, right? Like, in the moment, it's just like, oh, we're at Ped West. Like, finally. Like, it's a little bit of reprieve from what we've been doing. But it's like, I'm finally seeing God kind of causing this unity amongst the whole thing. Like, between government, between our church, between Jewish Family Services, Catholic Charities, Samaritan's Purse, every other church and their mother that stepped in, you know, and like, all of this is finally being like condensed into this. And you, I think you nailed it on the head when you said like Calvary San Diego finally became like this spiritual covering for the operation as well. We weren't just all hands on deck, figure this out. It was like, okay, now we've actually been given the ball to say like, with this responsibility, what direction are we going with this? And it was like, okay, Lord, like now it became, what do we do now, God? You know, like, and of course that is what it was the whole time. But now it's like, man, there's all eyes on us now. Mm-hmm. Like, and success or failure is like totally in our hands.
When we first started helping Ukrainians cross, they stayed at the park in Mexico for 3 to 4 days. Once they were approved to cross, they received a ride to the Calvary Hub from the Ped East or Otay borders. Initially, this was important because the Ped East and Otay borders were extremely busy every day. We could not figure out flights or housing for these people from the busy border entrances. Plus, these Ukrainians were stuck out in the cold rain or blistering sun for days at a time. Additionally, fleeing from war left them completely exhausted. Most of them just needed a moment to rest. This is where our Calvary Hub became the perfect spot to get a shower, a quick meal, and a bed to sleep in. As the weeks went by, the government started processing people quicker, and that meant their time in Mexico became shorter. The TJ Hub also helped because it provided safety, comfort, and a place to rest for the Ukrainians on the Mexico side. They no longer had to wait days outside to cross into America. What started out as a 3 to 4 day wait, in some cases, became an 8 hour wait. Not only that, but by opening Ped West exclusively to Ukrainians, the Calvary Hub became an unnecessary step in the process. Ped West was a vacant border crossing from Mexico to the US that was shut down because of COVID. By gaining exclusive access to the border, we were able to organize rides, find housing, and flights on the American front of Ped West. Shuttling people to the Calvary Hub from Ped West would be overwhelming. This was due to the amount of people crossing and our newfound ability to process all of their information at the Ped West border. Ped West also gave us better access to groups like Jewish Family Services and Catholic Charities. These groups were willing to sponsor and pay for flights for refugees who needed financial support.
Calvary San Diego has been a refuge for Ukrainians who had just crossed the border from Tijuana on the last leg of their journey. Joy Metzger with Calvary San Diego says they opened their doors when they saw the need.
It was just the obvious thing to do. They were in Mexico.
Calvary San Diego has stepped back as nonprofits with greater access to government-funded services stepped in.
We've had over 2,500 people coming in and through, either sleeping, staying for their next transport, taking a shower, and then heading off.
They're still working with families at the border, helping them find transportation and host families from their church.
Once the Ped West border officially opened and the Calvary Hub officially closed, the process of Ukrainians crossing from Mexico to America looked something like this. They would be checked into Planning Center and picked up by the Mexican government from the TJ airport. Then they would be shuttled to the TJ Hub, where they would check in, get a number, and wait their turn to cross. Once their number was called, they would be shuttled to the Ped West border, where they waited to cross into America. After they crossed, they were immediately met by one of our volunteers. These people helped our Ukrainian friends find housing, transportation, or financial support from the Ped West border. Both the TJ Hub and Ped West borders had food to eat and a place to rest while they waited for the next step of their journey.
I remember like when we first got to Ped West, you know, there's no tents, there's no nothing. It's just an open, you know, little, not a field, but like just a concrete little area. And and they'd kind of set up a little border, and that border kept changing every
shift.
Yeah, because they would, you know, a new group would come in there. It was worse than here because a new group would come in there, and I'd go home for the night and come back, and they're like, "This is how you do it." I'm like, "Excuse me, this is not." You know, we would always have this just because when you're there, you're boss, man. You got to just get it done. And we had this great guy. His name was Alexei.
Yeah,
and Alexei's Uzbek. And just a giant Uzbek bear, you know, and he wore the Ukrainian flag. And he was the one that started this. And they wanted to, it's funny, when I got there, they're like, "Can we put in chalk USA? I'm like, "I don't think they're going to want us to write on the ground." He's like, "Can we get some tape?" So I called Ben. "Ben, give me your red tape." And we made a little border that said USA, you know, USA on the ground. They were already in the U.S., you know.
Yeah.
The Border Patrol kept saying, "They know they're in America." We're like, don't. It's, you know, be symbolic. And he would, every person... You have to show the video.
The crossover.
They would, and he would tell them, "You're about to cross this line into America, and you're never going back across this again. You never have to deal with what you've been dealing with. All that is done right here." And they would come across. He would give them a big hug, whether they wanted it or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But some people definitely didn't. And most of them, a few didn't, but most were like, that was a moment of they were crying and they were just overwhelmed.
It's been a busy and emotional morning for Ukrainian refugees who were finally clear to enter the United States. All these people behind me, you can see just there, a reunion, and this man is going to give her a hug as she enters. Watch this. Yep, there we go. Every refugee coming in receives a hug from that man because they are feeling warm and welcomed here, but you know, most
and
of
from then on, everybody who was doing that did the same thing.
Yeah.
It was so fun to watch that. Like, it became one of the most fun places to be to witness this like moment, you know.
Well, it was funny to meet him here at the church, seeing him again, not knowing if he's a guest or a volunteer. And then going out there, I just happened to get to go with you. It was my first time ever going out. It was a Sunday night. And sure enough, here he was, still there, hugging people. And I loved it. I loved every person that he hugged. Like, wow. But not knowing that he's waiting for his family. So he had been, and we just got lucky. I mean, it wasn't anything. We just happened to be there at the end of his kind of shift. He's like, my family's number whatever, and they're going to be crossing somewhere within the next hour. So we're like, well, we're staying. We're not going anywhere. Yeah. We want to watch this. Yeah.
Here's a clip of Phil and Alexei waiting for his family to cross.
Okay, I'm here with Alexei. He's getting excited. His wife and two girls are about to come out, right?
Yeah.
Any minute. We're so excited. Oh, my God.
And we got to watch him after being there from early in the morning, hugging every person, and then to see his own wife and daughters cross over. It was just like,
that was powerful.
This is what makes it all worth it.
Oh, yeah. And then keep it going. His daughter, who's 13, who he hadn't seen in like 4 years, she went back with him the next day to the border to serve.
Well, we had asked Alexei, we said, "Can we put you up in a nice hotel? You haven't seen your family for 4 or 5 years. We want to put you up." And he said, "No, I want my family to see the process. I want them to sleep at your church." And we're going, "Well, we're not really hosting anyone in the church." Like, "We'll set it up." So Ben and Claudia, they set up the back room that we were storing all the feminine products.
That's where all my tampons were.
All those tampons.
And we set up beds. We set up mattresses on the bed because Alexei wanted to have his wife and daughters see the process. So they slept in our church that first night, and they woke up the next morning, and him and his daughter were out of the border welcoming people, and his wife and his little daughter, they were helping around.
They were
the
serving
church.
Around here, yeah.
Amazing.
And it was just such a common story of like, go out there, you know, come across, and then, hey, I'm here for another couple days, let me get involved and help. You know, I think like one of the things that really stood out to me in the Ped West experience was how, like you said, Aaron, like we became like a covering for the area and really spokespeople for government officials. I mean, there wasn't a day that went by where it's like, you know, there wasn't like, oh, hey, the head of Border Patrol wants to meet, or now the director of Homeland Security wants to meet, or hey, there's I remember when Anne, the director of Border Patrol, she's like, "Hey, Phil, can you be at the border at this time on this day? Because the Ways and Means Committee of the Congress is going to be here." I don't even know what any of those words mean, but she's like, "Could you be here? I think it would be good if they could see you and what, like, let them see what you guys do." So I remember making them all, like, they wanted to go inside. I'm like, no, let's stay right here. And I wanted them to watch when a Ukrainian family came out and everybody greeted them and clapped. And some of the ladies, you know, they're all in their business suits. They're all looking all professional and all. weeping, crying. Absolutely. This is the greatest.
I wasn't the only one.
Yeah. You weren't the only weeper, Julia. I mean, they're weeping and they're like, can we give you a hug? Can we give these people a hug? You can hug whoever you want. We're all about the hugs down here in Pedestrian West. And like that moment of, you know, I had one guy give me a card and he's like, hey, I'm a deacon at the Presbyterian Church. Call me because we could get involved. Like, you realize how many Christians were involved on the government side. Yeah. On Mexico side, on our side, the amount of journalists that were Christians blew my mind. Like, and even if they weren't, they were so kind. They were so like wanting to tell the story, and the right way. And I think I was really like changed by thinking like our voice did matter.
Yeah.
Even in a media political sense, because. And I told this from day one out there at Ped West to the very last day. I told the people there working, we are not activists.
Right.
We don't have an agenda. Yep. We're here to help. And that created so much like relationship where they were like, we can trust you guys. Yeah. You know, and I spent more time in these weird, bizarre meetings and conversations. Yep. You know, I was fighting to get a permit to be out there. And finding out who owned that land was like a battle in itself. Because you have all these different agencies and, you know, all three-letter agencies and nobody knows who's got what.
Right.
Finally figuring it out, and this guy's name was Jeremy that was the main guy I was working with. And literally, I got the permit on our last day, the day that it was all.
Phil, so I think that's key for our listeners right now is to know that Pedestrian West isn't this huge mega platform. It's what, maybe 800 to 1,000 square feet?
Yeah. Like maximum,
what? Yeah. I think it's like when you think Ped West and you've never been to Southern California, you're going like, wow, Ped West.
Yeah,
like,
this massive area. No,
you've
got you're right.
800 to 1,000 square feet of concrete.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Like, it's a bus stop.
It's a bus stop.
It's actually a bus stop.
It's a bus stop. And they gave us like, and they kept pushing us out more and more. We're like, we're losing square footage. You know, we're losing more square footage. Because they were like, hey, this is a security risk. Because every 2 hours, about 80 people were coming across. So on our side, it was always manageable a little bit. And then complete chaos.
Right.
Yep.
It would just be complete chaos with like hundreds of people. And then they would disappear.
As we mentioned before, Ped West was opened by the Border Patrol to handle the steady flow of Ukrainians seeking refuge in the U.S. The people were brought by bus from the TJ hub to the border, where they were processed by federal agents. Once they were cleared to enter the U.S., our volunteers from all over the country were there and ready to meet them.
Refugees fleeing the violence in Ukraine are coming into the United States.
Customs and Border Protection has actually opened the pedestrian border crossing specifically for all of these people. You see Ukrainians seeking asylum here, and CBS 8's Dana Marie McNichol joining us live near Ped West in San Ysidro. You've been there since early this morning, seeing a steady stream, Dana Marie?
Oh, absolutely. When we arrived early this morning, we quickly noticed a group of friends running towards each other and embracing with tears of happiness and hope now that they've crossed into the United States.
I cannot believe it that it's true.
We were just shooting in the sky, seriously. Like, we didn't know if it was going to work out or not, and they gave the green corridor just recently. Can't even believe that.
The ladies were best friends in Ukraine and now back together again. She is just one of hundreds of Ukrainians staying at a makeshift shelter just on the other side of the border here. People I spoke to say they were exhausted but feeling very welcomed when they arrived, greeted with hugs and cheers. Now, volunteers share with us that 500 Ukrainian refugees are arriving here daily. That's triple the amount that they saw last week. We're also being told that this Ped West facility is just open for Ukrainian refugees, so not open to the general public. So do take note of that. Of course, so many starting a new chapter here as they enter meeting friends and family. The reunions were emotional. What they left behind was as well. But I can see that most are in good spirits as they enter and cross here. I'm Dana Marie McNichol, live in San Ysidro.
Ped West was a busy place where people could rest for a while and get something to eat and drink. We had several stations set up to help people with their needs. The transportation station was for those who knew where they needed to go. There, they would schedule a time for pickup. Each day, we had several buses going to places like Sacramento and Seattle. The sponsorship station was where Samaritan's Purse helped those who did not have a place to go. The flight station was where volunteers helped people book their flights. They typically didn't buy tickets for flights until they made it into the U.S. The Kids Corner was where kids would get snacks and play while their parents took care of business. Keep in mind, all of this was within a small 800-foot piece of concrete that used to be a bus stop. Like the Calvary Hub, Pet West operated 24 hours a day.
And I mean, I think of things like the amount of trash to take out. I don't know how many truckloads Ben took. Two or three trucks a day. Yeah. You know, one of the things we didn't have on our side that they did on the, well done, Ben. Ben spoke into the mic. Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, you know, it was Elon Musk his group sent out the Wi-Fi. We had the Starlink Wi-Fi. That because we had no Wi-Fi out in that area, and Starlink sent us a little kit to be able to provide Wi-Fi out there.
Elon, we're looking for 9 trucks.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's,
thank you, Elon.
In that little 1,000 square feet of space, so we had amazing teams. I mean, Samaritan's Purse came in and just like was a huge help.
They championed that.
They championed that spot there, and they were helping with, you know, booking the flights and helping with the long-term refugee, because some families didn't have a place to go. You know, they didn't know where they were going to go. They didn't have family, and their program was amazing. Samaritan's Purse program with the long-term refugees, getting connected to churches and to household families, and those guys were there just doing an amazing work. Mm. And I just think, like, during that month, Calvary San Diego became a household name around here. It was just insane to hear about it. I tell the story. My wife was at a work party, and she was talking to her friends, you know, her coworkers and stuff. And one of the coworkers, a couple of them, their husbands were there, and the husband was sitting like, you know, 6 people away, and he overheard my wife say something with Calvary San Diego, and like he just stopped. He's like, "Wait, did you just say Calvary San Diego?" And like, Alyssa was like, "Yeah, Calvary San Diego. That's you know, my husband's a pastor. That's my church. We're and he's like the Calvary San Diego." And she was like, "I don't know what you mean, but like, yes, Calvary San Diego, working with the Ukrainian refugees." He's like, "Hold on." He like went all the way around the table and just sat down and was like, "Tell me everything. Like, tell me all about what's happening." There were so many people that once they found out we were connected to Calvary San Diego, was like, tell me what's going on. It was amazing just to see how the Lord kind of just used it, even in our community and in our city, and I mean, just throughout the country.
Well, and let's tell everybody, since we're talking about it, because it's kind of cool. We know something that others don't, is that I was like, maybe we should change our name.
Yeah.
You know, because we've been here for a season of time, and you know, maybe, you know, it's been here for a few decades.
Yeah,
we're trying to figure out our identity. Is it a good name right now? Does it express what we want to express, you know? And then after this, it's like, yeah, we're Calvary San Diego. Yeah. That ain't changing.
I mean, after you appear on NBC, you know, Channel 10, you know, with Lester Holt.
And yeah, me and Lester, you know, we're all BFF.
One of the things we are highlighting in this episode is not only the attention we gain from government officials, but also the news outlets. As the operation continued, we went from gaining favor with local news stations to national news stations. One of the bigger interviews was when Lester Holt interviewed Phil on the NBC special, Inspiring America 2022. Here is a clip from that special.
Hey, Calvary San Diego. I'm here. We got our 3 vans going.
Rocking. San Diego area pastor Phil Metzger witnessed the heartbreak too. As soon as the war started, he and his family flew to Ukraine to assist the refugees.
And we wanted to help get them out of the country because for a lot of them, you know, they were trapped. And so we're trying to get them out as quick as we could.
But when Pastor Phil got home, he found out the crisis had come to his backyard.
Did you think for a moment this was going to be a crisis that would land in your neighborhood, essentially?
My gosh, not in a million years. I had no clue that a pathway into the United States would be from the Mexican border in our hometown in Chula Vista.
I was also interviewed by NBC regarding my experience as a therapist working with trauma. Here is a clip from that interview from NBC's special, Ukraine Answering the Call.
Kia Middleton, a school therapist from San Diego, headed for the border with food and supplies. Kia could sense a hidden emergency.
Trauma is an invisible wound. It's something that you can't just pick out on someone.
She felt it as she drove a Ukrainian mother and her kids to live with a host family.
how much heartache and pain and all that stuff you have to be experiencing to hop in a car with someone you don't know, with your whole family. I think that's what really just, like, broke my heart. And sorry. It's unthinkable, but it's actually happening, you know? So there's a lot that I can't even process, you know?
You can now stream the full episode of Inspiring America 2022 or Ukraine Answering the Call on Peacock.
But you know, the crazy part is we've kind of talked about this as a staff too. When all this is happening, we're like, we're in the trenches, we're, you know, helping our Ukrainian friends. But all the while, there's news articles coming out. There's like, you know, different things that we have no idea are happening because we're in this moment. We're not watching the news. We're not reading articles. We're not looking at anything. We're just doing what we're doing.
It got so bad where it was like, oh, NPR, I don't know, just go talk to someone. You know, like if it wasn't CNN or NBC main news.
Or New York Times.
Or New York Times, then, you know, we'll just give it to someone else. There's like, oh, I don't have time for this now. I mean, it was like every day, multiple news outlets. It was insane.
School over to Phil, like he's on the phone, like someone's trying to talk to you.
Oh yeah, that's right. Like, yeah, that's right. Well, my favorite is when the Japanese group came. They literally, like, a Japanese news station came out because they wanted to tell the story in Japan. I'm like, what just happened to us?
My favorite was when
Japan,
Aaron.
Germany, that's right.
When Aaron started a cult, that was my personal favorite.
Well, yeah, you know, his flock of Ukrainians.
His first news article didn't go so hot. His first news interview.
It was ABC, right?
It was ABC. Yeah. We did an interview. All right, let's
local
set the
ABC
straight.
Local. Yeah.
Guys, Aaron.
We did an interview.
Aaron's a cult leader.
This was like one of the first interviews that came out.
It was like one of the first
initiation
interviews.
Is listening to this podcast.
So we do this interview, and it went well. He just showed the hub and all the great things, and then everything was fine. Until literally that night, I think it was Elena actually.
Who ends up
Googling something about Ukrainian refugees, and it's the first article up there. And it's literally like his headliner of like, Pastor Aaron, who is now leading his newfound flock of Ukrainians through America. I'm like, what? Like, how did you get that from our interview? Like, what did that even? And then she sends it in our group chat, like, hey, Aaron's our new cult leader, and like sends a picture. I was like,
We were good with that.
Pastor Aaron.
Our group chat was amazing, by the way.
Yeah, the group chat is whole thing. Yeah.
The article and interview by Dave Summers went like this.
For Sacramento.
With the punctuality of a train conductor.
I'll get them ready.
Calvary San Diego church pastor Aaron Sloboda gathers his newfound flock of Ukrainian war refugees for the next leg of their U.S. journey.
This is a silly example of how people wanted to hear our story. Looking back at all the news coverage during this time, it's amazing to see how the church and what God was doing in San Diego was so well represented. A photo of a Ukrainian sleeping in our sanctuary was featured in a New York Times post. CNN also wrote a lengthy article about the operation. This is some of what Catherine Choquette had to say in her CNN article titled, 100 People from One California Church Opened Their Homes to Ukrainians in Need. She wrote, Calvary San Diego is in Chula Vista, California, about 8 miles north of the U.S.-Mexico border. And as a growing number of Ukrainians were crossing the border from Tijuana to seek refuge in the United States, Metzger saw it as an opportunity to turn the church's beliefs into action. Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Right now, these are our neighbors, Metzger says. They're literally showing up in our backyard. It's been life-changing, Metzger says, describing what happened when Ukrainians began sleeping in his church, attending services, and ultimately changing his church's perspective on the world. One weekend, Metzger says, there were so many Ukrainians at the church that they held the service in Russian. Many have prayed together with their host families. A few recently got baptized. The whirlwind of arrivals passing through his church seems like it's about to end, Metzger says, since the Biden administration is advising Ukrainians to stop journeying to Mexico to reach the United States. Federal officials now are rolling out a program that creates a more streamlined online application process for those seeking temporary refuge in the U.S. As details about that new effort emerge, Metzger and members of his congregation say they're eager to share what they witnessed in one corner of California. There are so many things happening in the world, and we can't be aware of everything. But this, he says, is an area that God gave us open doors to see. End quote. God was using the situation to show the whole world his redeeming thread of hope.
My favorite was when you're with Lester Holt.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm at the border by myself, the kids pastor. And then the security team comes out for the border saying, hey, we need to see Phil or someone with Calvary San Diego. And I was like, oh, great. That's me. I'm like, hi. And so, and then the security guard's like, hey, you know, and I don't remember his, basically the guy that's in charge of border entry for the United States. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like the deputy director of Homeland Security.
Him, yeah. Wanted to talk to me. And so then he comes up and then he's got like 10 security guards and I'm just thinking like, oh Lord. Again, Lord, what do you want me to do today? And why am I here? So yeah. So
take
it was
me back
cool
to the
though.
Kids.
But then like talking to him and I was just really honest and told him what we were doing and he kind of just wanted to see what we were doing. And then I was like, you know, I was like, your job sounds really cool. I'm just a kids pastor. And he goes, well, you know what? That's more important than you think. He was like, that's a really important job. And I was like, cool. So it's like, and he was awesome. Like they were all awesome.
I know,
I was like,
right?
Everyone's so cool. Why are they? And so it was really.
Well, think of like going back to our journalists. You know, one of the first ones I did was with KUSI. With Matt Pritchard, Matt, who's, and yes, I did stick my tongue out on that, but not on camera. I didn't know it was still on, but Matt's been a great part of our church. Yeah. And because he just saw like, wow, I really value how God's working in this church.
Yeah.
And him and his wife have just become a really big part of the church here. Yeah. And you think, what a cool story that is. Like it continues, story. You know?
Here's a clip from that interview.
KUSI's Matt Pritchard is live in Chula Vista. And Matt, this is a 24/7 operation for the church staff, we understand.
Yeah, Ginger, that's right. I mean, the need here is so great, and that is keeping the congregation busy from sun up to sun down. In fact, since last Friday, they say that they've helped up to 1,500 Ukrainian families, and they don't expect that rush to be slowing down anytime soon.
We are all in shock, but we feel like it's we're supposed to be doing this.
For Pastor Phil Metzger, his personal connections to that part of the world added to the urgency.
I was a missionary, like I was a church planter in Hungary and in Russia for 20 years. And so, you know, Ukraine is my neighbor.
In response, his congregation has jumped into action, helping to drive vans, process families at the church, or even open up their own homes.
I think you said it, and like a journalist said this, like, they were just looking amongst all like the craziness happening in the world, like just looking for a story of like hope. Yeah. And it, like, the cool thing about it, and it, kind of talking a little bit about what Carlos was thinking about, like it was legit, like seeing all these news stations and stuff that are like divided on so many different things, like, and then like God doing something here and through all this stuff and uniting like all this stuff in a way that was really giving him glory, like through all of it. I'm thinking like one of the best articles was like CNN and the amount of times we always are like, not we, like not us personally, but like just people are always like, oh, they suck this. And then there's like Fox News, this, that, or whatever. And like literally all these news stations were like also coming in and like seeing what God was doing, no matter what like their background was or what their
beliefs
were.
And doing great stories.
And doing great stories, all of it. Yeah. It was super like... That was truly a reflection of like what God was doing.
Totally. Like I feel like we were so like it's such God's grace how we were represented. Mm-hmm. Like cuz so many times we could have been so misrepresented even though you had your flock.
Except for Aaron.
You know, except for Aaron. But overall if that was the only misrepresentation like
And
we
even
were,
that's
like,
not a big deal. And,
like, well, it's not really a misrepresentation.
Yeah, actually that was very sincere, but like we didn't have to embellish. We didn't have to embellish truth. We didn't have to kind of overly dramatize or kind of make these things. We could just be very sincere, authentic. I'm a child pastor. I'm this. That's who I am. Maybe an apologetic. But that by that sincerity, I think that's what brought people. Yeah. And I think I was nervous, honestly, like when we were in NBC, I was like, how is this going to be misconstrued? I mean, they can take your words and turn it any way they want in a news article or in a journalist, you know, in a journal. And I was like, how are they going to, not to try to save face for ourselves, but just, I don't want this to be some kind of typical church, you know, narcissistic leader who's trying to make himself a hero, and here we are, and you know what I mean? But really, like, communicate what God has done in sincerity and not trying to, you know, do anything. And I feel like that was done. And that's what's so, like, there's just gratitude. There's just gratitude because we do not have to falsify or dramatize or embellish the truth. We can just be sincere and authentic, and God is able to do it. And I think that's culturally been, the lines have been a little blurred, you know, whether it's in the news or whether it's Christians or social media. It is it's a blurred view of, like, how do you glorify God in sincerity? Do we need to kind of embellish it a little bit because we just want to make it a nice picture? But by doing that, I feel like we miss so much of, like, the authentic power and work of God. And I think that's what we experienced this past month.
And, like, we weren't, like, falsely humble about things or overly dramatizing. Yeah. And it was so refreshing to these guys.
Sincere.
Like, you could see that they kind of enjoyed conversations all the way around because it was very authentic. Like, like, oh, are you guys doing this? Like, no, we didn't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, like, it wasn't a bad thing. It was like, thanks for being so honest about it, you know? Yeah, I think that there was a lot of that. And I was, again, really, really shook by how many... You know, we're doing all the, I mean, it just became a joke of, like, you know, here's another interview. But then talking with these folks, like, I guess I forget, like, they're human beings in the same way that, like, we feel like people forgot that Ukrainians were human beings. I kind of forget that, like, government people and journalists are like human beings. And how many of them either were so sincerely thankful for what was happening. And like you said, Luis, like, and we talked about this many times, we got to be a part of something that was a unifier, not a divider. I feel like the church, quote unquote, the Big C church, has been so much in the news as a divider. We think this, and we're against this, and we're for this. And where we came in, like, we're not against or for, but we love people, and we're going to love our neighbor. And our neighbor speaks Ukrainian right now. You know, and that's it. Like, you are not gonna, we won't be dragged into something. We won't be pulled down. I mean, we've had conversations right in this room with congresswomen, you know, who wanted to learn more about what could this look like? How could we do immigration better? You know, the place in Mexico that was given to us for refugees, for Ukrainian refugees, is now being used for Guatemalan, Haitian, Honduran, for the next group that's coming across. They're like, we could do this better. And we've learned how, and we're going to continue. So I feel like it just makes it so worth it. Like, when we're honest and we're saying we don't think it's fair, and they're hearing that and going, okay, well, then how do we make it fair? What would that look like? And to me, that's a powerful thing.
This is a concept that Phil touched on in his interview with Lester Holt. Check it out.
Plan is to go back, though, as soon as
Pastor Phil hopes the kindness shown the Ukrainians inspires us to reach out to other refugees who haven't been treated as warmly.
I think the way that the world is responding to the Ukrainian crisis could be a great template for how we could respond to other people that are in crisis.
We titled this episode United for Ukraine because we were not the only group involved in helping these refugees flee from war. Volunteers from all across the world were involved. The Mexican and American governments and most every major news outlet were also unified with us. There was a joke floating around that we would say. It went like this. A Jew, Catholic, atheist, and a Christian walk into a bar to discuss how to help these people. It was a joke to us because of how true yet outlandish the situation really was. It was never easy. There were disagreements between people groups, methods, and beliefs. But one thing rang true through the whole process. Everyone agreed that helping our Ukrainian friends was most important above anything else. And we believe that this is the true heart of God.
In recent days, things have eased up for the pastor. Ukrainians can now enter the U.S. directly from Europe. As we welcome them, we can see that the Ukrainians have also given us a thing or two, a chance to rekindle our national pride in being a safe haven for the persecuted, and a chance to unite in a common effort.
These are really divided times. Do you think that what we're seeing, this outpouring toward the Ukrainian refugees, is a template for a better us?
I hope so. I really do. I mean, we've all banded together to say, let's help these people who are in need. That's such a powerful message for today. I hope it inspires us all.
there were a lot of questions about the fairness of this process. Isn't it unfair that Haitians in Tijuana or Syrian refugees in Hungary get treated differently than Ukrainian refugees? Our response was absolutely. Yet, as a church, we have no control over the laws of people or the perceptions others have of them. But we have control over how we respond to the people in front of us. Yes, we believe differently than many of our volunteers and guests. Do we agree with every article posted by rival news outlets like Fox or CNN? No. But how will they hear of the hope and work that God did if we don't give them full access to share the story? This situation reminds us of the story of the woman caught in adultery. It wasn't right for her to cheat on her husband. But on the other hand, where was the man she was cheating with? Regardless, the religious leaders took it upon themselves to challenge Jesus with this situation. According to scripture, the law says she could be stoned for her crimes. Because of that, Jesus was caught in a bind. By releasing this woman, the religious leaders were trying to ensnare him with the law, creating the perception that he was breaking the law. By stoning the woman, he would be making the statement that his authority was higher than Rome. In short, Jesus was posed with a religious and political conundrum. After ignoring their challenge to stone this woman, Jesus finally responded by saying, "Let any one of you without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." One by one, each religious leader left because they knew in their hearts they were also guilty. Jesus didn't let people's religious motivations or political drives dictate how to love the person in front of him. Instead, he let his global heart of love ring true in every situation. And after all the religious leaders finally left, he replied, "Where are your accusers? Didn't any of them condemn you?" "No, Lord," the woman answered. Jesus reassured her with words of grace and truth. "Then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin." You can read this entire story in John 8, 1-12. Through the situation in Ukraine, we've learned that we cannot express God's hope and heart of love if we see people through the lens of religion, politics, or issues. Instead, the gospel is displayed when we love others like Jesus commanded in John 13:34. In this passage, Jesus says, "So now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other." It was amazing to see how many non-believers were interested and curious about the God we served because of the love and care we had for people. Atheists and other religious groups coming to us saying things like, "Because of this, there must be a God." United for Ukraine meant more than just laying our differences aside for a cause. It meant loving the person in front of us like Jesus loved us.
You know, even this Sunday, we were talking with a family from the Silva family. The Silvas have a group of Ukrainians still living with them, kind of long term. They're going to be here. And why don't you tell that story, like, about them coming to church?
Yeah, well, this is their second Sunday. I mean, at least that I got to see them. Yeah. And John is a police force, or law enforcement.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So Jamie, his wife, was saying, you know, we love the Lord, we're open to the Lord, but for so long, just because he's in law enforcement, usually the first response, it's very cautious. No, we're not going to house, you know, strangers. We're not going to put our children in danger. You know, he sees a lot of
things. So crazy.
You know, ideally, he sees a lot. And so so here he is with a brother and a sister and another girl. They're all early 20s. These guys are just, you know, sweet. They're trying to find a job. They're just there. They're stuck indefinitely. And all the Silva's kids are all clustered into one bedroom. And they're like, "This is the best thing for our kids. This is the best thing for us. This is what we need. We are being changed." Yeah. And I don't know what aspect
share, but well, I was thinking of how they wanted to get to church on time.
Oh, okay.
Because I thought that was funny, but yes. That's a great, your part is more interesting.
So on yesterday at church on Sunday, Jamie's sharing the wife, just so such a sweetheart. And she's going, you know, "Here are these guys. I don't know if they know the Lord. I don't know their Catholic background or their, you know, European, you know, background of the Lord, but they were going to show up to church. This is their Sunday. And we were kind of straggling behind. I still need to take my shower." And I said, "Okay, no problem, guys." They said in their broken English, "We're going to walk to church." And so they walk. They get to church on time. The Silvas are still showering and getting the last minute, wow, to, you know, feeding the pets and getting out the door. And they were just like, their move, not in some kind of legalistic thing, but going, "Look at these guys. We're hosting them." And they're like, "We'll meet you at church. We got to go." They don't understand a quarter of the message. They can't understand what's
no,
being said.
No, but they just want
to
be
but
there.
They're going to show up to church, you know? And it's like for the family hosting them who's been in the church, love the Lord, you know, sincere faith in Christ, but they're being kind of moved in a challenge.
Totally.
In a healthy way.
And you guys remember when we had the service in Russian? We kind of forgot about how we did it in English and Russian.
That was
amazing. And before we talk about kind of our takeaways, there's another whole thing we kind of missed, but we said we wanted to. And that's that in the middle of all of this, in the middle of all of this, whilst serving, you know, in the way that we were, we had already planned and prayed for months to do for the first year as a part of our Better Together, which is our reaching into the families with special needs children to be a part of our church. We had planned to do a special needs egg hunt right in the middle of this whole thing.
Well, what a confidence builder. I mean, I think it was something that we prayed over and we won. I know personally, I can only talk for myself, but it's something that like I wanted, I would love it. It would be neat. It would be useful. And even talking to Amos and having other people kind of confirm that need and kind of like bring in, but then knowing like, but can we make this happen? Can we? And then with all that we experienced with Ukraine and then having it just on the side of like just my perspective, I know there were so much details that were brought in. But even there was like this confidence of faith that I didn't have. I had a heart for it. I had a heart for special needs. I had a heart to see them met, to see their families connected. But I don't know that I actually had the faith to actually see it come to fruition. Like you dream of something, but you, for me, I can dream of things, but sometimes I lack in faith of actually like seeing it happen. So seeing it happen, I went away that night, Daryl, and it was like dreams come true. My dream came true that night, you know? And I know that I don't take away from, like, the work and the effort and the time that was put into it, but I believe that it was so in correlation to what was being, like, our faith was being stretched. Mine was. And seeing Ukrainians and being, and like, I was being moved in my faith. And then to get to see something like this, it was all in correlation.
I feel like we went from, like, oh, my gosh, how are we going to pull this off logistically to, by the time it came, it was like, psh. Shoot, we've been housing 500 people every night. Like, yep. And not in a like, oh, this is easy, but more of that like, we, like you said, there's faith. Like we can be a part of this because God's bigger.
Yep.
And he's already figured it all out.
Well,
and yeah.
And I think of like, so like this whole like idea of like the global heart of God, like, you know, because I guess you can like think of like stories like this or podcasts like this, like a niche of like, we're just going to talk about Ukrainian stuff because that's our thing. But it's like the whole idea of like the globalness of God's heart for everyone. It's yes. Like, I remember there's this lady who was volunteering with us in Ukraine all the whole time. She was like there like night shift every time. She has a daughter with autism. And I like literally that Saturday we're doing the special needs egg hunt. And I was just like sitting there like, you have to come. Like, it's going to be the coolest thing ever. And then, so she's like, well, what's it going to be? Whatever. So like, I like walk her to Daryl's office. Because meanwhile, by the way, while everyone's doing Ukraine stuff, Daryl is like,
I'm in my office.
Yeah. In his office, like burning out, trying to like get this whole special needs egg hunt together with Amos, and like, they're killing it. Okay. And I show her like these eggs that Daryl made for like kids who are blind, and they're beeping eggs. And she's like, oh my gosh, like, where did you buy these eggs? And I'm like, we made them. Like, we did it because like we care for this community and stuff. Yes. And it wasn't about like Ukraine showed up, so we jumped in and we helped. But yeah. Like, our heart wasn't just for one people. It was like for any people that comes through the door that like legit needs God, which is all of us.
Yeah, and global, like, means global.
Global,
right?
Means global. And so it's like when like she saw that, she's like literally in tears. Like, I can't even process like where I'm at right now, in the sense of like God and his global heart was like legit represented in that moment. And it was like just me and this lady.
We had Daniel Carter, who is a pastor of a Calvary in Ukraine, who obviously has had to be out of Ukraine because of the war. And he came down and served with us for a week, stayed at Daryl and Elena's
house.
Yep.
Love that guy.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. And he was like, first of all, he's just blown away. Like his night one, I honestly thought, I don't know if he's going to make it.
Yeah.
Because he comes in.
We literally threw him in the fire.
Yeah. And he's just like super timid. And we're like, bro, you got to get in. You speak the language. Like, stop sitting in the corner. And again, I forget, like, we've been in this.
Yeah.
He actually ends up becoming an Alexei later on, hugging people at the border.
He became, he became crucial, and he was like, it was a drug to him. He's like, I gotta be there. Like, I can't stay at Daryl's house 3 more hours. I gotta get there. You know, he was that guy. But it was funny because like he, the Friday before the Easter egg hunt, he's like, and you know, he signs. He signs in English and in Russian.
Oh, wow.
And really gifted guy. And he grabbed me and he's like, you guys are doing an egg hunt tomorrow? Like, and it started as like, are you stupid? Kind of. But he was like blown away. Like, Phil, this is what the church looks like when they let the gospel be the main thing. Mm. Yeah. And that was so powerful to me of like, we had planned to do this by God's like sovereignty. Yeah. A year before, almost.
Yeah, yep.
We had no idea Ukrainians were coming across, but that's the way it goes. Like, okay, this is the opportunity right now, and that doesn't negate. I think that's another part of our story. Just because one thing is blowing up doesn't mean you just put everything else out.
Well, that's it.
You know,
that's it. Because I remember leading into this, you know, Joe and I are hosting these meetings and getting stuff ready for it, and then we're getting our MBA in Planning Center as we're working through like 5 different ways of how to register people. And so we're like, well, this might be the best method. And we're tweaking it, and we're going back and forth. And then, like, when Ukraine hits, I completely shifted. I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I remember Daryl coming to me and saying, like, hey, is there anything for the egg hunt that you may need to offload? I'm like, the thing is, I offloaded it just improperly, Daryl. Yeah, I was like, it's gone. It is offloaded, but I have tons that you can do. And he's like, dude, just give it to me. Let's do this. And he takes it and just chiefs the whole thing. Like, it wasn't even like a, he didn't even skip a beat. It wasn't like, oh no, look at all this stuff I have to do. He was like thankful in taking it, which was like, yeah. So just again, that unity in our team, moving into everything. And Daryl picks it up and it's just like, runs it to the finish line the whole way through. Is like, hey, you want special needs? See Daryl. Like, you want egg hunt? See Daryl. You want anything else? Like, go see Daryl. And it was like, everything's going his way now for it.
And it was like a resounding success.
Oh my
And we can just
I can't wait
like,
for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit just did it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think we were able to kind of rise up in faith. And I mean, obviously there was a ton of hard work behind the scenes, but we were at that point as a church where like God was just doing things, and he was doing the Ukrainian refugee thing, and then this was another like, okay, Lord, let's see what you're gonna do. And I mean, hundreds from our community came out, people came out and got connected to our church afterwards. You know, they felt they heard the gospel through our love for their children in the same way, and they were like, oh my gosh, there's a church who actually cares about my son or my daughter in this unique way. And I mean, it was like life-changing. It was life-changing for us. I mean, it was an amazing day. In the middle of everything that's going on with Ukraine, we have this like moment where God is like reminding us, like, you're here for this, for the local. It's everything. It's global and it's local at the same time. And it was such an amazing, I mean, that next staff meeting on Monday, we were just like, we in awe. It was hard to even talk about it.
We would have never planned such a big and important event like this if we knew it would occur amidst the chaos of a refugee crisis. But God knew this was exactly what we needed to learn more about His global heart of love for the world. Here is Phil talking about the special needs egg hunt the Sunday after the event.
That was an unbelievable day yesterday. I'm telling you, that was year one. This is our norm. We will be serving in that community every single year, but not just an event. You know, I think Joy and I like to always remind people, we're not an events-driven church. We do events because it gives us we're a gospel-driven church. And when that gives us opportunity to preach about Christ and to really not make a message, but to just live a message, it was an unbelievable day. Thank you to Sesame Place was amazing. Elmo made everyone happy. Elmo just warms the world. He should be president. Elmo should run for office. I believe he would win. Elmo would win. I don't even know. It's amazing, beautiful. And Cookie Monster was pretty dope too. It was an amazing Chick-fil-A. Everybody, I mean, it was a little, you know, the cops were like so amazing. The sheriff's department came out strong. They were amazing. And we're like, oh man, the fire department's not here. And then those dudes roll in the big red truck and everybody's like, forget the cops, where's the red truck, you know? it was a lot of competition happening among our services, our first responder services, but it was a beautiful day. I can't tell you how many families came up to say, this is the first time our kids ever been able to go to something. It's never been for them. So that was being planned. You know, we don't, you know, you couldn't have planned for all the things that have been happening around here to happen at the exact same time. It's like, I don't know why, but crises never come when we want them. They come at unexpected moments. But that's how the Lord works. And we just had this sense of like, we're going to just keep stepping in. You're going to hear me say this a lot to each one of us. We're not going to pause when things happen. We're going to just step into it. We stepped into this opportunity to reach this great community of people that often feel unseen in our neighborhood. And that's terrible. They should be seen. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful day. So we'll be putting a lot more up on that and thanking all of our partners.
The egg hunt was important for us to highlight in this episode because it speaks more to the point of loving the person in front of us. The Ukrainian crossing the border is just as important as the kid with special needs across the street. God's global heart of love does not value one person over the other. His love is just as important across the ocean as it is in our neighborhoods. Point being, the work God was doing in our hearts to serve the special needs community was of the same value as the work God was doing in our hearts towards Ukraine. Sure, we can't be a part of everything God is doing in the world. However, in this season of our lives, God was using both of these events to teach us about His global heart of love. Here is Joy in the interview with our staff.
I think, like, I'm still processing it, trying to, like, process, but I think being like a foreign missionary and now being a part of a local church, I think I'm having to readjust it where you see like the local church. So oftentimes we have local church, local God, local gospel, local faith, and it all fits into my local capacity because my capacity is local, you know? But then when you put gospel, global God, global gospel, global capacity and global faith, and you collide those together, it's an amazing thing. So oftentimes I'll have faith for like foreign mission. I have faith because I know I can't go to Africa on my own. I can't. Yeah. I can't connect to a Ukrainian on my own. I know my capacity requires faith in God. But sometimes when it's a local work, I put so much stock into my own capacity. Yeah. Well, I have the language. I kind of have the culture. I kind of know stuff. I mean, not a whole lot, but I know. And so my faith is so compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. So I think for me personally, the Ukrainian opportunity expanded my faith for my local ministry. And it was like, so the local church is like, it's the same God, it's the same gospel. When we're going to Ethiopia next week or next month, it's like that same faith, I require that for Sunday morning serving in the children's ministry. It's the same faith. It's the same work of the gospel and it's the same God. Mm-hmm. And so, but for me personally, and I believe that for our whole team and for our whole body, it's like we're having to like merge these two things into one.
Yeah.
Because it's not separate. We're not an outreach faith and a, you know, and then we have our church faith. It's like it's all in one, all encompassing. Oh, that's so
good. And it all matters. And it was and the church did the egg hunt. The same people that were housing Ukrainians were showing up for the egg hunt prayer meeting on Wednesday night, and I was like, "You guys are insane." And what was cool too is that we offloaded, like I was able to offload everything off of the staff's plate. By using volunteers,
yep.
People at church that were working their 9-to-5 jobs in the military with kids, and they were like, we want to be here, yeah, hosting Ukrainians, and then still being like, we want to be here to reach special needs kids. Mm. And I'm like, so for me, it was like, wow, like this is the coolest group of people ever. I'm so thankful, Lord, that I get to be with these people. And it was like, and again, it was showing up and going, Lord, what do you want me to do? And for me, you know, for Elena, it was streamlining all the email stuff, the whole back end thing, which was huge. And for me, it was like having the faith of, Lord, I know that like I really want to be in there eating with the Ukrainians right now. I really want to be able to talk to them, but right now I have to have the faith that you're going to do something on this egg hunt that I can't see yet. But I can prepare for it right now because the kid down the street means just as much to you.
Exactly.
So like really taking that perspective and not belittling anything that anyone's doing and not elevating one thing over the other, but being like, it's all ministry. And so if I need to like email parents right now about the egg hunt coming up or like do logistics, it's like that matters just as much as the fruit salad, as the driving Ukrainians. And so, and then seeing the church have that same mindset, all of my friends at church having the same mindset and going, Daryl, like I'm going to you saying, what can I take off of you? And then my like all my friends at church are going, what can we take off of you? And it just keeps trickling and trickling. And then that's the body of, you're like, this is the church. This is unity. Yeah. This is God's heart.
It's funny because I think it was about like 6 months ago when Ben in one of our staff meetings said, hey, if you got extra time, help the other person out. Like, just as a reminder, like, help each other out. Do you remember saying that, Ben? Yeah.
Help. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to get him to say one word. Okay. Yeah.
He said it. Yeah.
He said, yeah. I heard a yeah. Yeah. But then, like, how much, like, that became our reality on a very large scale, you know, where you see the need for role, but then the need to just, like, okay, Lord, what are we supposed to do? What does that look like? You know, I mean, I think it's one of the, you know, certainly we don't want to, I don't think of this opportunity that we had as like a one and done kind of a, oh, we did a great thing, let's have a podcast about it. This was more like there's lessons that were learned that, and I don't want people drawing the wrong conclusions. One, oh, these people were amazing. We don't see it that way. We see it as like God was really amazing. Yeah. And like I want to tell people that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like this wasn't like a, oh, we had a really cool 1 month experience, like a mission trip. This was not a mission trip. Yeah. Our homes became the world.
And the things that God's been teaching us from the very beginning, starting the podcast, whether talking about racial discrimination or marginalized people, it's all in connection to. Yeah. It's all the same gospel. So it's not like, oh, now we're in this zone or now we're going to step on this, you know, hot topic.
Right.
It's all been in connection to
exactly.
The Lord's been working in us as a church and individually in our own hearts with the Lord. Don't you think?
Oh, 100%. And I think for people to like see like this, the point of this show, this series is to, you know, it's like because there were certain lessons that we all learned about privilege, about opportunity, about unity, about working through exhaustion. Gosh, how many times have, you know, like, well, you can't do anymore because you're just too tired. It's like, no, you can. We can press
you
beyond.
Must.
Yeah, because there's not an option, you know, and you go like, Lord, when I'm at my end, you're not. That's a powerful thing to learn that we all got to learn.
I don't need a theater, don't need a Broadway. The path is narrow and I ain't taking no Broadway. They're telling me to start testifying in broad day, but I don't follow Yahweh, I follow Yahweh. Yeah. I don't follow Yahweh, I follow Yahweh. Yeah. So I don't follow Yahweh, I follow My rivals rely on they micro media. I rely on the Bible and encyclopedia. I'ma fight on from my home to Cairo, Egypt. Walk a tightrope to my idols, our bygones and Christ shows in the sky zone and I go meet them. We'll keep the lights on and pride don't eat us. We know not to rely on preachers. Sometimes I wonder if they really want my eyes on Jesus or on a ice of Jesus. Look, born stubborn, restored up at the Lord's Supper. He pours love and absorbs hunger with war plunder. A board cover, I'm sworn under the Lord's number. The forerunner who bore lumber for shortcomers. That's me, the chief of sinners with my frequent splinters. He went limp on the tree to kindle my allegiance with him. I flee from prison, bleed the mission on my knees, repent until we see the king. We lift the vision and defeat the system. The path is narrow and I ain't taking no Broadway. They're telling me to start testifying in broad day, but I don't follow Yahweh, I follow Yahweh. Yeah, I don't follow Yahweh, I follow Yahweh. Call on Jesus night and day. All my tears will wipe away. With our freedom, we gon' fly away. We gon' see a brighter day. Call on Jesus night and day. All my tears will wipe away. With our freedom, we gon' fly away.
You have been listening to Crossing Cultures. The song you just heard was Yahweh by Jay Monty. You can find his music on any music platform. If you would like to give to help support the efforts in helping Ukrainians during this war, you can go to calvarysd.com/Ukraine Relief or click the link in the description of this episode. This episode was produced by Phil Metzger and edited by Luis Lopez. This podcast is a ministry of Calvary San Diego. I'm your host, Kia Lopez.
and stay tuned for our final episode of this season, available November 1st on any podcast platform. Also, look out for more information about Season 5 of Crossing Cultures. You can find this information on our Instagram at crossing.cultures or on our YouTube channel. Thank you for listening to this episode of Crossing Cultures.